7 minutes past 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. Gavin Steinhobel, attorney at law from Kloppers Inc., is in the house, looking very, very ready to roll, so to speak.
There we go.
In your full kit, full riding kit. And it looks like very competitive riding kit, but you're heading off on an overland bike ride to Rhodes into the teeth of the
into
snow.
The teeth of the snow. Yeah, so once a year I arrange a ride to Rhodes with some like-minded folks, and we head from here on the motorbikes and we make 5 days of it. We stay on a farm there, Bidstone Farm, belonging to the Eisted family, and we do rides from there. You know, all those dirt road passes like Nordea's Neck and Lundin's Neck and Joubert's Pass down into Lady Grey, and we do these loops every day through the district there, the Eastern Cape Highlands. It's just south of the Lesotho border.
It's a stunning country.
It's up in the mountains. Yeah, no, it's absolutely God's country.
But at the moment, it's going to be like a winter wonderland. It is. Riding in the snow is a different thing.
We did it a few years ago, and it's actually good fun. It's more traction than you think.
Really?
It's just the black ice sort of that you watch out for. But, yeah, the snow itself is fine. You know.
Don't you lose sensation in your extremities? Eventually, you're just you're hoping you're sort of almost.
Well, you kind of, you know, these days the kit's so good that you don't really have to get cold. You know, in the sense that you can layer up, and it's really I've actually got an inner in the suit at the moment, and it's just too hot. You know, but I'm dressing for there, not here.
But are you going to ride from here, from Belize, or are you going to trail your bike?
No, we're riding from here, and. Yeah, so it's a fair haul. We're going to go from here to Underberg, just on all the dirt roads, all the way to Underberg, and we spend a night there. And the next day we'll crack through to Bidstone Farm, which is about 50 k's past Rhodes, up in the mountains. And the farmer actually sent me some pics last night, and it's the winter wonderland up there. So it's right there where Tiffindale Ski Resort is, just below Tiffindale Ski Resort.
No doubt there'll be lots of skiing, I would imagine.
Well, they've mothballed it, sadly.
Have they?
For those that have been to Tiffindale, there's two ways up. One is the Carlisle Hook Sprat. That's the one with the little concrete strips. And then on the Barkley East side, there's a really, really gnarly broken down pass that's kept together by cart tires that are chained together. And at the bottom of that is the Bidstone Farm. So there we go.
Well, you're going to have, no doubt, lots to talk about when you get back.
Yeah.
But before you go, I thought we might just touch on one or two things that caught my eye in the news. Which
the news cycles this year has been crazy. You can't keep up every week.
You know what I'm a little bit nervous about? It's masked as a good news story. And it is the fact that the World Bank has approved a $1.5 billion or 26 billion Zuid Afrikaanse rand loan to support structural reforms aimed at boosting South Africa's infrastructure. Now, that's 26 billion rand in loans. It's not a grant. It's not a free gift from above. This is going to cost us very dearly. Of course, if it's used correctly, the lender says that the operation will address South Africa's challenges of low growth and high unemployment by easing constraints in its energy and freight transport sectors, because South Africa has vowed to modernize state-owned enterprises and open key sectors to competition to boost its economy. Well, there's a bit of a problem with that statement, because as you quite rightly point out very frequently, it's only going to be competitive if it's attractive, and it's not going to be attractive until they remove the restrictions.
Exactly right. So, I mean, there's a couple of things that spring to mind. Firstly, is we already spending 20% of the tax revenue that we take from taxpayers in this country, not on this country, but purely on repaying historical debt. All right. So if I pay a rand in taxes, 80% of that goes to the fiscus, 20% goes to the moneylenders. All right. Already. Okay, so we're going to increase that ratio. So less and less of the taxes we pay will actually be spent in this country. They'll just be spent repaying debt and interest.
And this is a huge piece of debt that we're
incurring. Yeah, it is. I mean, we basically saddle future generations with this debt if we can't live within our means. The second thing is, talking about not getting great bang for your buck, all of these projects will be BEE. The BEE, as we've previously noticed, they can charge up to 40% more than a competitive quote would be if they're BEE compliant. So now you're getting 60 cents out of the money that you borrowed to do these projects. I mean, obviously the projects need doing, but why do we need to borrow the money? Well, we need to borrow the money because we've squandered the taxes for 30 years and we haven't maintained these things ourselves or built anything new. And so now we have to do a quick fix by borrowing the money, which we've got to pay back with interest. So, yeah, it's not ideal. I mean, I can kind of see that there should be some short-term benefit. It's not a great long-term call, but, you know, because people will be employed in the industries that are apparently going to upgrade this infrastructure, so it'll create jobs and so forth. But the truth of the matter is, you know, we're borrowing from the future because of the situation that we found ourselves in. I'm surprised that we can still borrow money.
Well, I was going to say, they've obviously done a bit of due diligence and worked out that we are still bankable. Mm. Thank heavens.
Because Well, it is a carrot and stick thing where the World Bank will obviously tie the lend to certain reform conditions. So they will require of the government to change the way they do certain things. Will they insist that they change their BEE rules? Well, one can only hope. The ANC seems to be doubling down on it, but, you know, they're in a national unity government, so maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel for those of us who believe that the great evil of the last 30 years has been BEE. Mm. It's been very expensive economically. It has made our economy uncompetitive. And, you know, if you want to see whether your policies are any good, have a look at what they've delivered. And, you know, we're down to not even going to hit a 1% growth rate this year. So, I mean, things are pretty woeful if you want the fruits of the policy and you want to have a good look at what you've achieved. So, yeah, things have to change. I don't get, and I don't know whether Cyril speaks out of both sides of his mouth, but he seems to speak to his electorate in one way and say, well, we're going to take land and we're going to BEE's going to be triple BEE now with a big fund for us all, and it's happy days. And then on the other hand, you know, when confronted by Trump and so forth, he seems to have far more conservative views. But in any event, he's a man on his way out, and, you know, much depends on what happens in the...
Well, you know, you say that, and sometimes, while clearly everything must change, sometimes what comes next is even more chilling. And I say this because there's been quite a lot of, shall we say, back chatter about the incumbent deputy president that the ANC may be lining up to take his position. Mm. One Paul Mashatile. Yeah. Now, you might have seen over the past few days expose as to how much money he has squandered on his international travels with his beloved.
Yeah.
Millions and millions of rand.
They've lost touch. The politicians have lost touch. I mean, they don't know where the money comes from. They just... it's like somebody who's won the lottery. You know, you don't have that regard for money, the same regard as somebody who's perhaps sitting on money that has been saved up by his forebears over generations, or money that he's earned through his own perspicacity, or money that has
That's
come
from...
That's
a lovely word, perspicacity. Gee, word of the day should have been that.
There we go. you've got a different attitude to money when it's just easy come, easy go for these fellows. But I think it's coming to an end. The money's running out. I mean, the fact that we're going to do
well,
this...
Well, clearly not if you look at the loan they've just taken.
Yeah. And again, you know, I don't want to be cynical because that's just sad, but, you know, historically they've never been really good at being accountable for large sums of money. And it all seems to somehow filter through and nothing really gets done with it that's constructive, you know. So, I don't know. I'm assuming that the World Bank have tied this to a whole lot of preconditions and that they'll release the funds, you know, in a drip-feed fashion.
Well, here's hoping that might be the case.
I just do feel, I mean, you know, it's that inevitable sense of the untenability of the current scenario that keeps striking me. It's not a system that can go
Things
into the future.
Apart.
Yes,
the center cannot hold.
And the center cannot hold. Yeah, Yeats.
Chinua Achebe.
Yeah. W.B. Yeats. Yeah. And so, and I keep liking it to that same feeling that I had, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, that things can't continue like this and change is afoot. And so let's see, you know, and normally the, you know, the people who have to change are the most intransigent just before they're forced to.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing from, you know, the likes of Cyril. You know, he's really doubling down on very stupid policies. And you think that's sort of what happens just before the demise of that way of thinking. So let's see. I'm hopeful. I think this country has people in it that are far more sensible and more conservative and more passionate about this country than the ANC tends to realize. So let's hope. I just would really like us to now finally throw off the past and say, well, you know, come on, this is a great country. It's hugely underachieved. That means there's massive potential for anybody who wants to get involved and invest here. I mean, it's the easiest thing in the world to get our growth to 5% from where we are. Because
it's a bit like entering a race of one.
Yeah, I think they said something.
You'll win.
Yeah, somebody said with the growth rate that we've had compared to what other developing countries have had, we've got a 40% missing economy that would have been there otherwise.
And yeah, we discussed that last week.
That's just absolutely massive. You know, and we can't afford to do that again for another 30 years. You know, things have to change, and I think they will. I keep getting the sense that, you know, you can't argue with logic and you can't argue with common sense, and the facts are the facts. Regardless of your beliefs, the facts stay the same. And the facts are we haven't done very well as a country and we can do a lot better. How? Well, we've got to change our way of doing business.
On the more positive side, if you're looking for positives, it would appear that even the mainstream media, as in Piers Morgan, for example, and many others, are now completely disillusioned with what's happening in Gaza with regard to Israel and the policy of not allowing independent journalists into the territory while what they call a genocide occurs. Now, genocide's a word that's been bandied about.
They've worn it out, unfortunately, like the word Nazi or the word...
But it is a most horrific word and a most horrific concept, and apparently what is happening in Gaza is, there can be no other word to describe it, and it would appear that the entire world is now turning and against the suffering of innocent civilians, particularly the children, and hundreds of thousands that are being affected.
Yeah.
And then South Africa comes out quite well, because who took the Israeli Defense Force or Israel generally to the International Criminal Court?
I think that's a conversation you know, I often I think about it in these terms. I remember when I was in your early days, we all do a couple of criminal matters, and you'd have somebody who's committed some crime, and they are on their way to being sentenced, probably to imprisonment or whatever.
That could be your riding partners waiting for you. They knew that you would be in the middle of an interview, so they thought they would phone.
Well, I've got it here deep in the jacket. I'm trying to dig it out. And then what would happen is that, you know, when you're doing your plea in mitigation, you'd say to the magistrate, well, this person has got a family and so forth, and, you know, a lot of people are going to be affected by this. And the attitude was always, well, you know, he didn't seem to give his family much thought before he committed the crime.
Oh.
Right? And, you know, for decades of firing rockets into Israel and I think a lot of people have never really taken the deep dive and seen what really happened on the 7th of October, you know, just machine gunning children at a concert, raping women, elderly women, sending videos of it home to their parents, all these guys that invaded Israel. I mean, it was the most heinous of attacks.
Yes, but let's not forget that there was a political grouping called Hamas. It was not the people of Palestine.
Who are the government of Palestine, Of the Gaza.
Our government that's doing stuff in South exactly, Africa is not us.
Exactly. Well,
not you and not me.
No, no, but by and large, we vote for them.
Well,
it's easy for. I can also. You know, nobody voted for apartheid, apparently, when you look back.
I didn't. I can say that with my hand on my heart.
I didn't either. But anyway, I only got one vote, and that was in 89 when we voted in that referendum, and I did vote the right way there. But, you know, ultimately, I remember when they were just, when they had those Bibas children, you know, the 8 months old and 2 years old that were kidnapped and they were strangled by Hamas. They weren't even shot, you know, and it's just the absolute hate and that came across with that. And when they returned those bodies as part of the deal and the celebration, the way that everybody behaved on the streets, that wasn't just Hamas. So, I mean, we got to be careful when we look at this. You know, ultimately, I think any country, if you had to be honest with yourself, if you'd been attacked like that and you'd suffered these rockets being fired into your country for decades, you know, when ultimately you retaliate, I don't believe that people can honestly say that self-defense has limits or that retaliation should have limits. Because if retaliation is always limited and controlled, okay, then it will never, ever serve as a deterrent to people attacking you.
But Gavin, so, you have the Geneva Convention and the various others to protect innocent people from horrendous suffering.
Yes.
And if everyone obeys or follows those conventions, there is some hope for the future. If you throw out those things like the Geneva Convention, there is no hope for the future.
Well, I mean, obviously the Geneva Convention must be obeyed, but you know, nobody ever said to Ukraine when they were invaded that they should restrict and be measured in the, you know, it's you know, nobody says that to any other country except Israel.
But there are terms of engagement, and they're generally speaking, although they might be odd for us.
I think it's very simple. I mean, Israel has been saying, and it's fine that we have a difference in views. A lot of people have a difference in views on this. It's a very hot topic.
Yeah,
it's like abortion or euthanasia. And it's good that people express their various views. My personal view is that Israel said, give us our hostages back long ago, and we'll stop. And it hasn't happened. Okay, they said Hamas must surrender, and there will be no Hamas. And if you say, and if you correct that Hamas is the big evil, then let's get rid of them. Now, they are going to root out Hamas, and they're going to do whatever it takes, because you cannot live with an antagonistic neighbor like that that's going to willy-nilly fire rockets into you when they next get the chance. And, you know, Israel's won 10 wars now against their neighbors. And every time they get told to stop before they finish the job, and every time those people resurrect themselves, they get arms again from Iran and they start again. So it's a cycle that they don't want to keep going through. So I'm not saying what they're right, or I'm not defending them. I'm saying that their position and their hard stance on this after all these years is totally understandable.
If you look at it through that filter, then there is a case to be made. But looking at it through the filter of humanity in general.
No, I agree. I agree with you. But, you know, I never, ever saw anybody come out after 7th of October and mourn the children that were murdered, you know, 1,200 of them or whatever. I never saw the world take any sympathy. And I thought, that's so strange to me because, you know,
I think the media probably played it down, but I'm sure that there was a general...
There wasn't. You know, I don't remember people on the streets. I don't remember, you know...
Oh, I think there were. There was a huge outpouring of grief and anger. Oh, there was.
I remember right after it happened, people were already in the streets saying, Israel better bloody watch out what they do next because, you know, they've got to be measured and they've got to, you know... Oh. It's got to be... You know, so I'm not just being devil's advocate. I think that if you provoke, all right, then you can't complain too hard. You know, those rockets and that, they've sent from schools, hospitals, from civil places in the Gaza. So, you know, the population are to some extent complicit. And you know... Ultimately, it's too difficult to think for us to discuss in 10 minutes. But
the problem is we don't know that because no independent international journalists have been allowed in. So all the information that we're getting as a global society is coming from Israel.
Well, only till recently.
Why would you not allow international journalists into a war zone? Every other war zone in history.
Yeah, I mean, you can. You know, it just seems like it's rules for thee, but not for me when it comes to this conflict. I mean, nobody said, well, you know, the Geneva Convention doesn't allow you to strangle an 8-month-old kidnapped baby.
I think the Geneva Convention would come down very hard on.
But I saw very little outcry about that when it came out, and you know, but everybody's rallying around the, you know, the on both sides. It's been horrific, and you know that
and
is
maybe that is the thing. It's horrific. It needs to end.
It will end, and I tell you, it's going to end when Hamas is defeated, and that's just unavoidable.
Wow, that's a good point to pause and reflect. I'm horrified at that concept because, if you take the conclusion of what you have just said, they have to annihilate the entire Palestinian population.
No, they don't. They don't. And they're basically doing block for block, and they're going to, you know, I don't know if there will be a Gaza after this. You know, I was listening to Niall Ferguson the other day, and he was saying, you know, They were offered a deal where they would get the Palestinians, you know, a two-state solution. They were offered a state in Yasser Arafat's time already. Bill Clinton said so as well. And they didn't accept it because their only condition is Israel mustn't exist. All right, well, you can't. That's not going to happen. There are too many people there already, and it's already an established country. So they've had several opportunities of a two-state solution, which they've declined. Okay, they've never agreed to that. And everybody sort of got exasperated and said, well, you know, what do you want? Well, we want from the river to the sea the annihilation of the Jewish state. Well, fine, that's not going to happen, okay? And so that's an intractable position that they've taken up, together with all the actions over the years. And, you know, it's an unpopular thing to say because at the moment, you know, everybody is looking at one side of the event. But ultimately, I think Niall Ferguson said, you know, I'm Scottish. We don't have a state. You know, we're part of Great Britain. So it's going to be, it's strange because people often forget that Israel's got, you know, Arab members of parliament. You know, it's the only democracy in the Middle East. You know, all of those things that count for it, all of those things that we should all be saying, well, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and you know, although time is against us now, my final point would be that there is a huge lobby in Israel that is anti-Zionist.
Absolutely.
Because this problem is being created by a very hard right-wing Zionist government.
Of course.
It does not represent all of the people of Israel.
Of course, there are plenty of Israelis who feel that what's happening is completely unacceptable.
Just on a humanitarian basis, you know, alone, it is unacceptable.
Very interestingly, I always remember the late Christopher Hitchens when he wrote about the state of Israel, and his mother was Jewish, and he said, you know, he always thought the state of Israel was a massive mistake because the Jewish people had set themselves up all over the world. They'd become a cosmopolitan people. And suddenly they were rushing back to the soil and becoming agrarian people and taking a massive civilizational step backwards. And so there's several ways to look at all of these things.
and we luckily are still able to, being able to discuss freely these ideas and these concepts and these emotions that sometimes polarize people to the point where we don't speak to each other. Luckily, we will continue.
No, we're fine, Dave.
Gavin Steinhobel, our attorney at law, may you have safe travels to Rhodes and back in the bleak midwinter that you're going into. It'll be fascinating to follow you on social media, which
I'll post some pics of the snow.
And all things being well, we will be in communication again in a week's time.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll be here on Monday.
Lovely. The morning show.